name is Bruce McAllister. I'm with the Construction Engineering Research Lab out of Champaign, Illinois. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Michael Baranski, who works with Jone Technology, was the head biologist for the project. Tim Hayden, which is he's the Threatened and Endangered Species Program Manager at CERL. And Rebecca Peek, who I, for some reason, left off this title slide. I'd like to thank her because she was instrumental in the support that she lent to the project. I'd like to start off with a little bit of background on the project. It was done in the spring of 2006 at Fort Hood, Texas. I'm not going to go into great detail about Fort Hood. You've all heard about it a number of times. But for those of you who might not have, it is one of the premier Army installations in the United States Department of Defense. It's home to two heavy divisions, the 1st Cavalry and the 4th Infantry, mechanized. So they see a lot of heavy-duty training on this installation. It's also one of the largest, 218,000 acres, and it's home to two endangered species, the black-capped vireo and the golden cheek warbler, which is the species that my talk is about today. The impetus for this project happened back in 2005 with the base realignment and closure effort that DOD underwent then. DOD looked around to all their installations and tried to decide how they could make themselves less expensive and more efficient. And during that process, every installation was examined. And when they looked at Fort Hood, they saw that there was limited maneuver training available on the acreages that Fort Hood actually possessed. And as a result, brigade combat and support teams that had been temporarily stationed there at Fort Hood were subsequently moved to Fort Carson, Colorado. And as a result of that, even though there was a negligible effect on the personnel and equipment that stationed at Fort Hood, the people at the installation decided to evaluate the available military range land that they had on Fort Hood and see how what they could do to increase that. Primarily, they focused on that range land that was east of the impact area and north of Belton Lake, which up until this point has received relatively little heavy usage. This is the part of the installation that supports large contiguous tracts of both vireo and warbler habitat. And it's also one of the areas that TNC has their intensive study areas located. But because it's going to be evaluated for future training increases, this presents the potential for impact on not only the species themselves, but it could trigger compliance actions under the National Environmental Policy Act and the Endangered Species Act for those natural resource managers on the installation. So the objective of our study was to determine and document demographic parameters, and some of them are listed there, affecting the population of golden cheek warblers in those non-intensively studied areas on post. The approach we took, after an initial planning meeting that involved Rebecca Peek and some others at the Nature Conservancy on post, as well as Fort Hood DPW personnel and the CERL study crew, we surveyed a new study area. And I'll show you a slide of where that is on post in just a moment. And it was determined that we would follow the well-established TNC protocol that has been the way that TNC collects data on the installation on these birds established in 1991. We're going to determine territory location and size, mating status, nest productivity, and we're also going to do some color banding of the adult birds, which would facilitate individual identification of each of the animals. And all this data was going to be compared to those gathered by TNC in their intensive study areas to see if that information could indeed be extrapolated to other areas across the installation where they are not intensively sampling. This is a map of Fort Hood. The greenish, light greenish areas are what's available for golden cheek warbler habitat, and I think this map is from 2003, roughly. You can see in the darker blue areas, TNC's intensive study areas. There's one down here in what they call West Fort Hood, over here in the eastern part of the installation, and then one up near Manning Mountain on the western side. And then our study site is right here. It's located on the eastern edge of Fort Hood, north of Cowhouse Creek, on the western edge of the Owl Creek Mountains, and it's roughly 164 acres in size. In TNC's intensive study areas, like I said before, they've collected data here since 1992, and this is just a short list of measurements they actually take. Territory size and density, the age structure of the birds, male mated status. Those males that are successful in fledging more than one young per season, and they do a lot of nest monitoring. The data is then used to monitor population trends, estimate possible causes of increases and decreases in the golden cheek warbler population on the installation, and to get an overall general idea of how Fort Hood is doing as a whole in terms of its golden cheek warblers. Our study site, this was only a one-year study. The monies were not available to make it a multi-year effort. So we did just one field season. And with this, we hope to provide baseline data in those areas likely to see that increase in military training that I mentioned. We wanted to see if the data from the intensive study areas could indeed be extrapolated to habitat areas that are, as of now, currently either unsampled or undersampled. And we compared that data to PNC's data from field seasons 2003 to 2006. Now, as I mentioned, they have data on record going back to the early 90s, but there was a change in the protocol beginning with the field season of 2003, and we felt that that change was not, our study would not be directly comparable to information that was gathered previously, so we only looked at their data from 2003 to 2006. Once we got on the ground and started the project, we first did some territory mapping and observational surveys. Males were observed observed in a specific area over the course of a number of visits were said to have an established territory, and we focused our efforts on trying to capture those birds with mist nets and put the color bands on them to facilitate individual identification. We then used a GPS and took a coordinates of each point location where the birds were observed in every day that we were out there. And those GPS coordinates were later used in a GIS to map their territories. These territories were continuously monitored throughout the field season. The observations were made at least twice a week, ideally more, and at least an hour at a time. This is a map of the individual birds' territories. We found that there were 30 territories in our study site. Like as I said, we plugged those location points into the GIS and used the polygon creation tool in ArcGIS 9 to produce these territories. But as you can imagine, the birds don't put up fences and say stay out to the other birds. Their territories do tend to overlap a little bit, and the cross-hatching that you see in territories like number 30 or 18, the only reason they're cross-hatched is for ease of visual identification here so that you can see where the discrete territories were. When we looked at the productivity, we considered males to be paired with a female if one was observed within that male's territory at least on three separate occasions. Nest searching was conducted for all those males that were considered paired, and I don't know if any of you have ever been in golden cheek warbler habitat on Fort Hood, but it's a mature ash juniper forest, and it can get very dense and hard to traverse, never mind finding nests. So we had to rely a lot on behavioral clues from the birds themselves and systematic searching. Just a little bit of detail on when we did our surveys. And males were considered to have produced successfully fledged young were observed feeding fledglings or carrying food. This is a picture of the habitat and a nesting bird. Territory density was calculated by dividing the number of territorial males by the total area of the study site. Size was calculated by plotting the GPS coordinates of each observation using that polygon tool and then using ArcGIS to tell us how big that territory was. Mating success estimates were calculated by dividing the number of paired males by the total number of territorial males on the study site. And to estimate the number of fledglings per paired male, the total number of observed fledglings was divided by the number of paired males. This is a look when we compared our territory densities to that determined by TNC in these years. Ours were a little bit lower, and we thought there might be differences in food availability or perhaps nest parasitism by cowbirds. And there are other reasons why we thought perhaps they were lower, is because that there were differences in the reason why we thought that there was a difference in comparison was because the TNC did not collect information on the actual size of the territories when they did their collections, whereas we actually calculated the size. So there could have been discrepancies there. Here are the results. I'll just kind of whip through these real quick. Territories ranged in size from 1.58 hectare to 6.87. And then we were able to band 15 males and 2 females. And there's a breakup of how those animals shook out when we looked at them. Pairing success was very similar to that from the data collected by TNC, as you can see here. However, the number of territorial males producing at least one fledgling was a little bit higher in our area than TNC had found. And we figured that although the sampling protocol was the same, but inaccurate IDs of banded animals may have had something to do with this. For instance, if two males lived in adjacent territories and they were unbanded, we may have made a mistake in seeing the same male in two different instances and then figured it was two different males. In conclusion, the study generally supports the extrapolation of TNC's data across the entire installation, but there are of course some caveats. Because it was only a one-year study and it was limited to one study site, there's no repetition, and we would really like to have more money in order to do additional studies to see if we could extrapolate that data to other parts of the installation as well. Data collected on the Mesa Tops, where future training is most likely to occur, and we did not look at habitat that was in those areas that the Army is not likely to train on, like the sides of the mesas. And if there's any time, I'll take some questions.
I think we're out of time, so let's say thanks to you.